Hi, my name is Cindy Felix, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
I want to thank my sponsor, Clancy, for asking me to participate tonight. I'm an Eskimo from San Bernardino, and that's why I'm an alcoholic. All the Eskimos from San Bernardino that I know are alcoholics. Me and my two brothers. I guess they thought, what's the worst possible place you can raise the Eskimo and try to kill the race off by raising us there. My father raised me and two of my brothers there. My mother left when I was 3 years old. And my father is German and Irish. And I thought for a long time that I looked just like him. And he was a good father. He did the best he could. He drank periodically while raising us. And he took us to Baptist church. And then when he was off church, he was on Gallo red wine and Brew 102. And, you know, he loved us a lot, and he cared for us, and he worked full-time and raised the three of us by himself. So I don't have anything to blame on my father. I became aware of my outward appearance when I went to school, and the kids would make fun of me, and they'd call me a Jap and a chink and all these terrible names, and, you know, funny. Anyway, I can remember I would come home from school, and I would sit on the edge of my bed, and I would stretch my eyes out and so they would become round, and it worked. But I started smoking dope, and they shrunk right back up again, you know. By the end of the party, everybody looked like me. When I'm sober, as the book describes it, I am restless, irritable, and discontent. And that's on a good day. My head has always been very loud, and, you know, it's a real nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live there, you know, one of those kind of things. When I drink alcohol, it quiets my mind, and when I'm sober, it has changed a lot, but when I was sober, I didn't like to converse with people, I didn't like to be touched by people, and you know, if you give me a pint of Southern Comfort, I care about you a lot. And I become a drunken goober is what I become, you know. My father remarried when I was about 7 years old, and he was working as a probation officer. And in the evening, he had a job at Patton State Hospital. And he came home from work one night and said, I'm getting married as soon as she gets out. And weekend pass came and we met Mom. They were married for 4 days, but it was intense. My father went into a big drinking bout after this, and you know, I had, up until just a few years ago, always been very uncomfortable around women. And even back then, I had a real difficult time with it, and my reactions were real poor. And, you know, my feelings didn't start to change until my actions did. But I was very jealous of the women in my father's life, and I made it very uncomfortable for my father and the people around him. He remarried again when I was about 10 or 11, to a woman who got me drunk for the first time. And we moved into her three-bedroom house. Wish I had a watch. Anyway, we moved into her three-bedroom house in Sunnymead, and my four brothers shared a room, and I shared a room with it. And I don't like real happy people. And my little sister is a cheerleader. And her name is Barbie. Never even heard of this kind. Anyway, my little sister looked as if she was smiling all the time. But the truth is, she was still sucking her thumb and couldn't close her lips over her teeth. So, you know, the fun thing about Barbie was she was addicted to a pillowcase with a Raggedy Ann and Andy printed on it. And it was her dussy. And she would go catatonic when she didn't have it. And so when I had nothing to do, I would put it away. And, you know, that was my first experience in being a higher power. And I still get a warm feeling just thinking about it. But you know, my father stayed in that marriage for about a year and a half, and at the end of the marriage, we bought a house in Riverside where my drinking started. Didn't really start there, but it started at a real rapid pace there, and I was drinking real heavy. I fell into a group of kids at school. They were referred to as the stoners, and my brothers went the exact opposite direction, and they joined ROTC, and I was embarrassed by their behavior, and they were embarrassed by mine. And right about this time, my father found AA. And then my hell really began. My father used to go down to the Alano Club. And, you know, there were no homeless back in the 70s because my father took them all in. This woman and her three kids moved out, and so we had a bunch of empty bedrooms, and we just had this hideous set of newcomers moving in and out of our house. And I forgot to mention, I was very defensive when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, I'm sure there are some things in my childhood that led up to it, but you know, I hung on to it for as long as I possibly could. When I was growing up, this woman would hit me and my little brother a lot with a belt. And she always hit him first. I knew she liked him better. But I can remember I would just stand there with my arms folded, and she would just whack away, and I wouldn't cry, and I wouldn't flinch, and I wouldn't do anything until it looked like she was done. And I'd say, "If that makes you feel so good, why don't you do it some more?" And then she'd do it some more, and I'd think, "That was stupid." You know, really showed her. But you know, and growing up, I was molested by my next-door neighbor who was in his 60s. And, you know, these are things that we're embarrassed about when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we never want to tell anybody. And eventually, they become things you brag about from the podium, you know. I mean, Mona apologized for not being in jail long enough earlier, you know. The steps relieve us of the things in our childhood. I firmly believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is the only therapy necessary if you're an alcoholic. But anyway, I was real defensive and pretty hostile when I was sober. And like I said, I loved to drink Southern Comfort, and I loved Old English 800. And I loved them together. And I threw up a lot. And I started blacking out pretty early, and I was getting in all kinds of trouble, and my father made me go to a couple of Alateen meetings, and I think I went to like two Alateen meetings, and then they asked me to never come back because I was drinking and smoking dope outside the meeting. And I was getting sent to these camps for juvenile delinquents where they give you intensive therapy for weeks at a time, and I mean, being in my head is the last place I need to be. And I would just go crazy. I couldn't stand being sober for more than a couple of days. And these newcomers were really getting on my nerves. I passed out a lot on this couch that we had. And they would tuck literature under my cheek when I was passed out. And I would come to and there would be like the 20 questions and the pamphlet, "Are You Too Young?" And I just resented their presence, and I did not get along with my father, and I didn't get along with anybody. I hated my brothers. At the end of my drinking, I had a couple of hallucinations, and they were in blackout, so I don't remember. They were just what they told me. The problem with that was every time I began to have one, my older brother would punch my face in so that I could see things clearly. And one particular day, this AA member had gone duck hunting, and they brought over a gunny sack full of dead plucked ducks and threw them on the porch. And my father filled the bathtub up with cold water and threw the ducks in there. And I had been drinking a little bit of Southern Comfort and Old English 800 and smoking a little bit of dope. And I walked into the bathroom, and something caught my attention, the corner of my eye, and it kind of looked like they were ducks, but they were real relaxed. And so I just finished what I was doing, and I washed my face, and I walked out, and there was my older brother. And he didn't say anything, and I wasn't going to jeopardize my face one more time, so I didn't say anything either. And it was just a real long night. Now, the next night we had duck for dinner and I felt better, but I just really got to the point where I could not tell what was real and what wasn't any longer. I was still in high school. I couldn't concentrate on my work. And my father, like any good newcomer, quit his job when he got sober and didn't work for a year, and then got his first job at Kellogg Mental Institution, a graveyard shift running the adolescent unit. And he stayed there for a couple of years. And he was going crazy because me and my two brothers were drinking and using a lot. And he would be gone from about 7:30 in the evening to about 8:30 the following morning. So we had parties at our house every night. And he just got tired of working with these crazy kids all night and coming home and finding about 20 kids passed out all over the living room. And he told us that he had contacted our mother and was going to send us up to Alaska to live with her. And, you know, I didn't want to go there, and I didn't know this woman. He had made amends to her, and this is how we began communicating with her again. But I didn't know her. I didn't want to be there. I don't like cold weather. And, I mean, I don't like to get up off the couch, let alone get on a plane and go to Alaska. So, anyway, my father didn't have to work one evening, and he came home, and he said that he was taking David to an AA meeting. And David's 2 months older than I am. And he told me that he was going to go to Upland to hear a man named Chuck C talk. And would I like to come? And I said, "No, why is David going?" He said, "David's an alcoholic." And I said, "Oh, God, I'm sorry." And I said, "No, you go ahead. I'll have a drink for me and a drink for David." And they went to the meeting. And at the very end of my drinking, people were no longer hanging around me. And two girls had come by this night that I hadn't seen in a long time, and they brought a fit of Southern Comfort with them. And I guess we're celebrating because I got glasses out. I got those, you know, old Ronald McDonald glasses. And we even threw a couple of ice cubes in. And I drank mine, and I drank what was left in the bottle. And the way I look at things is, if you're not done with yours, by the time I'm done with mine, I'm rightfully entitled to yours. And they had a term for it back then. It was called a Bogart, which is just a polite word for a pig. So I just grabbed this girl's half a glass of whiskey, and I knew I couldn't hold it and sit down at the same time, so I sat it down on the arm of the chair. And as I sat down, I knocked it over. And I had been drunk for a couple of days straight now, and I was not based anywhere near reality. All I knew was that this was the last of the alcohol, and it didn't dawn on me that I could get more of it. But I just started crying. So I started to scoop it up with my fingers, and then my keen alcoholic mind told me this is going to dry up quicker than you think. So I sucked the carpet. I have a classy drunk, but that night I went to look for my brother down at the college, and because I loved him that night, and I couldn't find him. And I thought somebody was firing a loaded cannon at me because I kept wiping all these things off of my face. There was little pieces of rocks and glass and blood. And I didn't understand why they were firing these things at me. And, you know, what had happened was I was climbing up a real steep hill and I kept landing face down into the ground. And they finally got me to the top of the hill and had gone back into the blackout. And I walked through the alley, and there was my little brother and his best friend lying against the garbage can with ripped T-shirts and chains around their neck and what appeared to be blood all over. And I just started crying. And my little brother's best friend brother was there, and he said the gang came by and took care of him. And I had been in this gang for a brief period of time. And I just started sobbing, and they hopped up and said, "Ha-ha, we're just kidding." And I still thought they were dead. And you know, they were eating the ketchup off of their body to show me, and I was still convinced they were dead. I loved the sorrow of my brother's death, I guess. And you know, they took me into the kitchen, and there was my older brother who punched my face out again because I couldn't see that my brother wasn't dead. And I just took my clothes off and started vomiting all over the place, and they threw me in my bedroom and shut the door. And my father came home from the AA meeting after listening to Chuck C, feeling real spiritual, as most people did when they heard Chuck, and came in to kiss me goodnight and found me lying there, and I was completely white, and my eyeballs were rolling in the back of my head. And I was overdosing alcohol, and my father carried me into the living room and asked these kids who were passed out all over the place, you know, what's wrong with her? And they said, well, she's got a headache. And you know, he threw me in the car and took me over to Riverside Community Hospital to the emergency room, and they were going to pump my stomach, and I pumped it for myself, all over my father and the doctor, and spaghetti for dinner. And anyway, I sat up and I said, "Oh, F, I'm drunk," and I passed back out again. And the doctor said, "Mr. Steckdub, I'm sorry, but we're going to put a 72-hour hold on your daughter. She's obviously trying to kill herself, and she's not far away from doing that. We're going to send her over to Kellogg Mental Institution. They've got a great adolescent unit over there." And my father said, "I know, I run it." And he asked if he could bring me home, and he did that. And I was in and out of a blackout for 4 days. And the last time I came to, my father was shoving me in the back of this Nova, and they were taking me from Riverside to Pomona to the Triangle Club for my first meeting. And he said, "They may call on you tonight." And I said, "What do you tell them?" He says, "You tell them your name and your disease and that you've been sober for 4 days." And I couldn't believe that I had been sober for 4 entire days. I was so impressed. You know, I'd been in a blackout the whole time almost. But and they took me to this meeting, and I was still shaking and sweating and getting up and running to the men's room and vomiting, and they thought it was pretty humorous. They kept bringing me full cups of coffee, and you know, I remember people talking to me. I don't remember what they said. I don't remember what was said during the meeting. My father told me that I had to go to AA, and that's why I was here. I did not want anything from you people, and I did not want to be sober, and I didn't want to be drunk either, but I was out of answers. And I kept going to these AA meetings, and I stayed clean and sober for a while. But, you know, I heard people laughing in the AA meetings So I knew they were smoking dope out in the parking lot before they came in. And I asked this old-timer named Lyle, he had 6 months, if he wanted to go outside at break and smoke this great J that I had in my purse. And Lyle, 6'5 or 6'6, and he picked me up and stood me on a chair so we could have eye-to-eye counsel at the top of his lungs. And he said, we not only don't drink in AA, we don't smoke dope, and we don't take pills, and we seldom shoot heroin. And I just said, don't you think that's a little extreme? Because I could not picture life absolutely and completely chemical-free, you know, and that is when I believed that I was truly different. I knew if you felt the way that I felt when I was sober, there was no way you could get sober or maintain any kind of sobriety. And it made me change my sobriety date, and that's the date I have now, which is March 10th of 1977. And my first 2 years of sobriety are much like many people's drunkalogs. I didn't stay in any town for more than about 3 months. And, you know, my head was real loud. I went to 10 to 14 meetings a week, I guess, my first couple of years. And, you know, I decided what was killing me was this fast pace of L.A. And so I loaded up my box and went to Oregon. And I got up there. And it was picture perfect, you know, it was quiet and serene and the sky was blue. And my head just got louder and louder and louder, you know, and I found out I hate nature. And while I was up there, I'd gotten this job working at Sambo's as a waitress. And I was not real people oriented at this stage in my sobriety. And I would just stand there with my arms folded. Say, what do you want? And they would order something like pancakes, and I would come back with a stack of pancakes. And they would say, can I have butter and syrup? And I would say, no, you didn't order butter and syrup. Because I couldn't put two and two together. You know, it didn't, if it didn't apply to me, you know, you got exactly what you asked for. And, anyway, they found it necessary to let me go, and I came back to L.A., and I came back to this group that I had been in and out of my first 2 years, and I was talking to Tom, who was Tom Inn, about the only friend I made at that point, and he told me that I had to go ask the lady standing at the door to sponsor me, and now, Pat was secretary then, and I didn't know who she was or what her story was or anything, and I just walked up and I asked her, and she told me that I had to make a commitment to her and to this group and to AA, and I just said yes, and I knew I'd be gone in 3 months, so it didn't matter what I told her, and she got me a place to stay with Janet Inn, who had sponsored me before. I think Pat was my 10th sponsor, and so I lived with Janet and her two kids for a while. And, you know, I was a real loner. I didn't do anything with any of the people here. I showed up everywhere, but I did everything by myself. And, you know, I can remember the first time I put makeup on, you know, Pat told me that I had to go see Jenny and that Jenny would help me. And, it was a hideous experience. She put a ton of makeup on my face. And it was Friday night, so I had to go to the Stag. And, I mean, I just, for the first time in my life, felt top-heavy, you know. There's just so much makeup on, and I was just very self-obsessed. I can remember when I had about a year of sobriety, a lady named Betty sponsored me. And I was still in Levi's and barefoot all the time. And on the weekends, I was traveling out here from Simi, and I stayed with a lady who used to be in this group, Jay. And Betty told me that I had to go to this wedding the next day. And I said, oh, no, I don't do weddings. And she said, you do weddings, and you'll be there with a dress and a pair of shoes on. I said, well, there you go. I don't have a dress. And she said, Sue lives across the hall from where you're staying. and why don't you go over there and she'll have a dress for you. And I thought, I bet she will. And I didn't like Sue then because she was everything I wanted to be but didn't know how to tell anybody. She was just real feminine and nice, and she has 8 months on me or something, which was an eternity back then. And so I went over there, and Sue gave me this dress. I thought, oh, my God, I can't wear this thing. And I came back, and I called my sponsor. I said, I can't go. She said, doesn't it fit? And I said, I don't know. I didn't try it on. She says, try it on and call me back. And she hung up on me. And I tried it on, and it fit perfectly. It was dark blue, had little tiny white flowers all over it, had lace coming down the front, and it tied in a big bow, just my style. And I called Betty back, and I said, well, it fits. And she said, oh, good, I'll see you tomorrow. And she hung up on me. God, I can't wait to be a sponsor. And, you know, the reason I did not want to go to this wedding was because I knew people were going to make fun of me. I thought they were going to say, what is she trying to prove? You know, who is she trying to kid? And I got a pair of heels somewhere that I didn't know how to walk in. And I got there, and everybody told me how pretty I looked. You know, and the guys were lighting my cigarettes for me and pulling my chair out for me. And I don't even know who got married. That the wedding was for me. And you know, but it didn't dawn on me what the people here were trying to teach me. You know, Betty told me that if I took the actions, the feelings would follow. That if I acted like a lady, people would treat me like one. Eventually, I began to feel like one. And that applied in every area of my life. If I acted responsible, people would treat me that way. And eventually, I'd begin to feel responsible. And my Pat sponsored me for a couple of years, and I had a lot of big changes in my life take place. And, you know, I stayed somewhere for more than 3 months. You know, I'd been here for 2 years, and then she abandoned me. And I didn't know, I still was not close to a lot of people here. And so I got her sponsor, Clancy, and he was sponsoring my husband also at the time. And he made me take another inventory. I'd taken one in my first year that was not thorough, and I took my inventory, and you know, I dumped all of that garbage that I was carrying around all that time. And I know Clancy taught me that we live for long-term comfort instead of immediate gratification, that sometimes it's necessary to take actions that make us feel a little uncomfortable right now so that 3 months or 2 years or 6 years down the line we feel good about ourselves. And I can remember, this is real corny, I don't even think I've ever said this before, but when I was molested growing up, I don't remember a lot of what happened. I guess I just blacked it out or whatever, it doesn't make any difference. But I do remember that this man used to lie me on a cold table or floor. All I can remember is cold. And all the time while growing up, I was real affected by the cold. Every time I got too cold, I would break out into hives. And I remember reading this part to Clancy in my inventory, and he threw a cigarette out the window and rolled the window up and turned the heater on. And since then, the cold hasn't bugged me. But just little areas like that, he's been very thoughtful. And, you know, I've worked the steps with him, and, you know, I've had a lot of changes. I got married when I was 9 years sober, and I was pregnant, and I was terrified. You know, I hate kids, and I don't know how to be a mother. And, you know, whenever I heard kids crying before, I thought, you know, why don't they just smack it? And so when I was pregnant, I was pretty terrified as to what kind of mother I would be. And you know, I thought, I never changed a diaper before. I don't know what you say to it. And 7 months after I was married, Daniel came into my life. And, you know, the funny thing happened. The first time he cried, I wanted to pick him up and I wanted to make him feel better. And, you know, that has never happened to me before. I wanted to do everything I could to make somebody else's world better. And, you know, when I was able to see what that relationship was, it changed a lot of my relationships with people. And about that time, I started sponsoring girls. And, you know, it's just been a fantastic experience to see the world all over again through my son's eyes and to see AA again through the eyes of the women that I sponsor. And I work the steps with them. And, you know, I feel good about myself most of the time. And, you know, there are days like I had today where I just was feeling kind of glum. And, you know, thank God I live quite a ways away, because then I can drive all the way here and get angry the whole way. It relieves the grayness. And anyway, my husband and I have been married 3 years next month. And it's been a real difficult situation. And he's been in and out of AA. And you know, the people have carried me here. I have kept Alcoholics Anonymous first, as I have been taught to do. And I try to be a kind wife, and I try to be a good mother, and I try to be a good friend. And I have a lot of people here that I care about. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I've been able to grow up here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober 11 years and 10 months. And, you know, I know on days like today, I just... I'm not supposed to think about myself. I can remember one time I called Pat when I was a couple years sober, and I said, I just ate a half a gallon of ice cream, feeling fat and ugly, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, well, just don't think about yourself. But, oh, okay. And, you know, I have found something here that is louder than my mind. And, you know, it is true that AA does for you what drinking did for you. And, you know, it takes a much longer time. But, you know, if you're a new Alcoholics Anonymous, I strongly suggest that you get a sponsor and that you get some commitments and you just do what we do here. You know, I love Pacific Group and I love the activity level, and, you know, I live and breathe for the yard. And my time's up. Thank you.